Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Brandon, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show peeking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winna Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Journalist Margaret Wobbler.
Hi there, Guy. How you doing?
Hello, Margaret. I'm good. It's good to have the team back together.
I know.
I've been gone. You've been gone. Other people have been gone. Just trying to make it through. And of course, academic and DJ Oliver Wang.
Hi, Guy. How is the making of quality television going for you?
The making of quality television is, it's still work. It's still a drive. It is still just something you keep on pushing at. How is educating America's children?
It's a little despondent given the current climate, I would say.
It's understandable. Plus, they're just sad it's not summer anymore.
So am I.
All right. So this week, we thought it would be fun to answer the questions of you guys, the listeners, about pop culture and other stuff. So we put up a prompt to see what your questions were, and a bunch of people answered on Facebook. So today, we're going to go through, and we're going to have a mailbag episode where we answer your questions for advice about life, love, and what to watch with your boyfriend. First question. Winna, you want to read it for us?
Yeah. I love to cook, and I've been casually seeing someone for a couple months now. I'd love to have him over for a dinner and movie night, but what should we watch? And for that matter, what should we eat? We are both dudes, and I'm a vegetarian, if that helps.
This is a fascinating wellspring of issues. I'd like to pull them apart, okay? First of all, you're having somebody over, dinner, movie in the house. You're setting the stage for something to happen, but you're also cooking yourself, which means you're going to be taxed and paying attention to that, and you have to have something that's simple and you can take care of. And then there's the additional issue. A little indelicate to discuss, but if you're two boys and you're considering going past third base, we really need to keep this light. We need to make sure that we're not throwing anything interfering into the playing field.
You're being so delicate right now.
Oh, my God. I just figured out what you were talking about.
Barely. Please. I'm barely being delicate. So does anyone have any firm thoughts?
I'm not a vegetarian. I really like meat. Uh-huh. So he should try to make something meatless. Uh-huh. So maybe something like veggie burgers. Veggie burgers are, to me, if someone is not a vegetarian and you are, that's an easy go-to, because most meat lovers aren't totally bothered by veggie burgers. If I end up on one, I'm not mad at it, generally. If it's made well and it's like a black bean type of scenario, you know, it's meaty, it's hearty. You throw it over some rice, you throw it over a bit of lettuce. It's fine. Like, it's not aggressive. It doesn't make me feel like I'm eating, like, cow, you know,
parts.
Yeah. No. Cow, like, you know, like when they, what they cows before they become
cud.
Steaks,
cud.
They eat cud.
Yeah. I was... Go ahead, Margaret.
Well, I have some strong opinions on the food part of it in particular, because I'm not totally meatless, but I am close to it, and I cook vegetarian a lot. And there is one cookbook that I wanted to recommend to this gentleman that is from Yotam Ottolenghi and Sammy Tamimi's, and it's called Jerusalem. And these two guys, Ottolenghi he's got a bunch of restaurants in London, and he was raised in an Israeli Jewish family, and he has wonderful recipes coming from that side of it. And then Sam Tamimi is Palestinian, and so he brings in food from that side of it. And of course, it's a wonderful statement about how much just goes through the borders there, food, culture, life, love, etc. But it's just chock full of delicious recipes that, like, anybody could make.
Do you have any Mediterranean, Middle Eastern films that you think pair well for a date?
Oh, man. See, I didn't think of that connection to the food. I did think about, though, and I don't know why I'm thinking about this movie, but it's just been popping in my head a lot lately, is Croupier.
Oh, that was a good movie.
It's a good movie, and I think it makes for a sexy first date movie.
Tell about Croupier.
It's Clive Owen's first movie, or really his first breakout. And he plays a down-on-his-luck novelist who decides to get a croupier job, basically a car dealer job at a casino.
South African casino, right?
And it is all of his adventures interacting with the people who come into the casino.
And sexy Alex, what's her name, from ER, plays the lady. And that was, like, the one good movie she got.
Yes. So I think there are beautiful faces to look at in that movie. It's sexy. It's in a seedy kind of underworld, but it has an element of class at the same time. There's just lots to talk about too with the movie and what happens in it. So I think making something from the Ottolenghi Jerusalem book is going to impress your gentleman date, and then following up with Croupier, it's like you can't go wrong.
I respect what both of you have said. Your approach here is all wrong. You start out by letting the movie set the tone, set the mood. Mm-hmm. You're somebody who loves to cook. Going with sort of like a sensual, fun, beautiful, like, you know, one of those movies, like the good cooking romantic movies that really are sort of like sensual and exciting. And my mind went to, like, Water for Chocolate is fine. Mm-hmm. It's a little soapy. I realize that you're gay guys and you like melodrama. But then my mind went to Tortilla Soup, which was
I like that.
A remake of Eat, Drink, Man, Woman set in Los Angeles that came out like 3 weeks after 9/11, so no one saw it.
Right.
And is about, I think it's Edward James Olmos plays a guy with a Mexican restaurant who has three grown-up daughters who are all sort of confronting their own relationship issues. You guys are gay guys. You love women's drama. That's what you're looking for. And then that leads us into what's a great vegetarian option that sort of like is working with these flavors and energies. And I was thinking like maybe day before you could make some like wonderful squash with like Mexican oregano and...
Oh, spaghetti squash.
No, not spaghetti squash. Like summer squash, like yellow squash or the like sort of light green Mexican summer squash. And like cook that lightly with Mexican oregano and some tomatoes and not too much like red pepper, but that sort of thing. Look, if you have it within you to make your own tortillas, fucking do it. It changes everything. maybe also if you want to get really crazy, like cook some hongos so you can have like some mushroom tacos, like a mushroom taco and a squash taco and like some pico de gallo, lovely lightness. And then settle in for a movie like that. Another movie that I thought could pair well with that is a really great romantic comedy. One of the romantic comedies of the past, like, 20 years that people don't think about is a movie called Something New, which is about, bougie black girl from Baldwin Hills falls for her gardener, who is a white guy, played by, what's his name?
Simon Baker.
By Simon Baker. It is Sanaa Lathan at her loveliest. It is so gently, delicately funny, but one of the things about this guy is he's a gardener and he runs like a community garden in South Central Los Angeles. And I was thinking, you know, like that with sort of like a lovely, fresh, late summer kind of meal could be really, really fun. Two other like light, fun comedies that could be good: Cactus Flower, where Goldie Hawn won her Academy Award, just like a light, gentle
love
comedy
that.
Where if you guys end up blowing each other halfway through, you're not going to lose the thread.
Always important. Always
and of course,
important.
But I'm a Cheerleader, my go-to movie for messing around with dudes when I was in law school. It's a fun comedy that I've never seen the end of.
Okay.
Oliver, do you have any thoughts or do you want to read us the next?
I would just briefly add that if this is the first time he's cooking for his new beau, maybe do something, and I think this would work well with the recipe, the squash recipe that you mentioned. Do something in the slow cooker so you don't need to fuss over it. So you can start the preparation early so that by the time he rolls over, all you really have to do is just dole it out.
But keeping the slow cooker light, I think, is a problem. Another thing I was thinking of, what do you think in a slow cooker could be sort of like light on the lighter side?
You could do a super stew.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't have to be heavy.
Yeah, like a nice vegetable soup.
Sure,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, something that you're not fussing in the kitchen where something could go wrong and then you get stressed and then it brings out the ugly side if you're stressed out in the kitchen.
Absolutely. You need to be breezy and beautiful, girl.
I also have this zucchini pasta recipe that like no one could mess up ever. I'll leave it on the website.
Okay.
On the Facebook group.
And also we like Italian was sort of another nice direction. Can anyone think of any good, fun, like datey kind of very Italy movies?
The one with Marissa Tomei and Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, what was that called?
Oh, right.
I forgot what it's called.
The pickup guy?
Molly Ringwald.
Sorry.
Only you.
I was going to say Under the Tuscan Sun because the only thing gay guys like more than women's drama is aging women's drama.
Well, this is, but that one gets so sad.
It's Does it? I've never actually seen it.
It just goes into a place that it's just like it's a little too melodramatic. I feel like Only You is light enough because Robert Downey Jr. is ambiguously gay, and you know Marissa Tomei is like authoritative, but like can be your, you know.
Everyone says I love you. Also spends a lot of time in Venice.
Yeah.
And is like a movie you can miss three quarters of, and you still can keep the thread.
If they've been going out. If they've been casually seeing each other for a couple of months, I think sex is probably presumed. So really, you just need to pick a film that doesn't fuck up the mood.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to overthink it, but you definitely don't want to pick something that just leaves people like, no,
Oliver, I
just don't
want to I will there. Overthink what I want to overthink. All right. Read the next one.
All right. My boyfriend has an annoying habit where I'll save items on my DVR and watch, and he'll watch programs, sometimes whole seasons of something I want to watch. When I suggest I want to watch something he's already seen, he pulls a face and suggests we watch something else. Break up. That's my first advice. This is not going
to
work out.
Honestly, it's not fair. It's not fair to fucking do that. My boyfriend does it too. And I just put my foot down because I've been watching television longer than you. So I know what I like. I know what I want to watch. And that's just the fucking end of it. Also, try to watch it when they're not around.
I mean, this seems disrespectful of your needs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I need more information, though. Are they living together, or is it just when he's
Sounds
there?
Like they're living together if you have DVR privileges.
I mean, I do.
But she says my DVR.
I do get annoyed when people are like, oh, I can't watch it. Jeffrey's not here. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do think you need your own independent lives.
But there are shows that you watch together as a couple. That's just part of the agreement. But apparently they have not gotten to the point where they've had this basic communication in terms of, we're going to watch Game of Thrones together, but if you want to go off and watch some other shit that I'm having no interest in.
How formal is your decision process with Sharon whether something is going to be joint watching or single watching?
I think it's not overly formal, but we understand the shows that we watch together. And if one of us were to watch a show without the other, there would be issues involved with that.
See, I do understand this boyfriend a little bit, because I will say sometimes that David, when we talk about a show we want to watch together and I have saved it, and every week I'm like, hey, we should watch whatever. And he's like, oh, I'm not in the mood right now, or I've got too much work to do or whatever. And after a while, I'm like, I just got to watch this solo, you know. But most of the time I will, I'll report back to him and I'll say, it's really good. You should really watch it. And then I'll sit and watch it with him again.
Right. But he's binge watching entire seasons. So
but
I think
that's not cool.
Yeah.
He can make a foray. He can watch one or two on his own, but he cannot go all the way to the end or something
all
like
right.
that.
All right. Let's suggest either a show with a good fictitious boyfriend for her, or a deeply woman show that she should be watching on her own and not let him participate in. I will start out by saying, Mr. Robot, you can have like Rami Malek as your imaginary boyfriend, just like he has an imaginary crew of hackers who are his friends.
A show that he will not want to watch at all, unless he's just a sadist or masochist, is Scream Queens.
Nice work.
Scream Queens. Scream Queens is like, I don't know. My boyfriend likes it, but he's weird. So unless he's weird, like, Scream Queens is a good show to sort of, like, you don't have to, you actually can watch any episode and you'll figure out what's going on. It's just one of those.
I would say Orange is the New Black, only because that's a show that Sharon likes to watch that I have zero interest at this point in watching, so I'm totally fine with her binging the season. But again, break up with your boyfriend.
Also, and like, do what I do. I make it incredibly packed in the DVR to the point where he only has like 1%. And then I say, he's like, can you delete this? And I'm like, no. And he's like, why? I'm like, because I'm not gonna.
That's warfare.
Yeah,
you're
fuck
a strong
it.
Negotiator. Okay. I'm a 27-year-old gay man. This is not me speaking. This is me reading, because that would be a gross attempt at lying about my age. I'm 24. I'm a 27-year-old gay man, and I just came out to my parents last year. I feel like they're having some time adjusting to the news. It's odd because they haven't brought it up since then. I really want to start introducing them to quote-unquote gay stuff that I like, and I don't know where to start. I showed my mom The Birdcage around Pride. Good choice. And that all went well, but I think it might be too soon for RuPaul's Drag Race. My question to you is, what are some gay pop culture artifacts that are a good place to start with my folks? Or for the queer members of the panel, what's something that you bonded with your parents over? This is a hard thing, because parents so frequently want to just look away from it and not have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was reading through it, my mind immediately went to The Birdcage, because I feel like it does such a great job of flipping the game and making the gay couple the loving parents who are just trying to get the best for their son. And it does sort of like help them see through the eyes of gay people. My mom was notoriously cagey about avoiding any sort of gay stuff, Will and Grace, anything. But then recently she watched a British movie called Pride, which is about gays in Britain who teamed up with striking mine workers to help them out because they were both opposed to Mrs. Thatcher. I think both groups were wrong. That bitch ran that country like a motherfucker. Being semi-ironic. But it's a really good, fun movie. Two other movies that like really deal with the relationship between gay, queer, or questioning kids and their parents are Kissing Jessica Stein, which a lot of people were annoyed by. A lot of people hate, what's her name, the ex-Mrs. Ham.
She's back in.
Oh, she is?
Mm-hmm. Jessica, what is her last name?
Jennifer Westphal. I love that movie. There's a scene in it where she is trying to figure out how to tell her mother that she's gay. And then her mother says, Nicole's a lovely girl, or whatever her name is. And it never fails to make me cry and really shows a parent who cares too much and doesn't understand it, wrestling mm-hmm. with it and being accepting, which I think mm-hmm. is lovely. And another great movie is one that just came out and I just talked about on the show, Other People, mm-hmm. Chris Kelly's movie about a gay comedy writer taking care of his mom who's dying of cancer. And it really does a great job of dealing with the fact that, like, you can be a grown-up and still have a parent who's disapproving of you and have that be a rough thing. And I think that that's a great way to sort of, like, look at those problems, but without having to talk about them when nobody wants to talk about them. But Madonna, Truth or Dare, I endorse.
That's a great recommendation. I'm wondering, though, what you guys think of the question asker's idea that RuPaul's Drag Race is too much. Because
I don't think it's perfect. I disagree.
Yeah, I think it could be a good entree into mm-hmm. thinking about gay culture because mm-hmm. it's fun, it's light, but at the same time, you do see these real moments of people, like, struggling or just also living real lives.
And they are costumed cartoon characters who aren't going to look like your son. And you're not going, like, it's a little bit distanced from you, and she can start wrapping her head around it without it being too close.
And the point of the show, drag queen is sort of, like, draped over it. It's about, like, owning your brand. There's, like, a business side to it that people don't really...
And also owning your identity.
Owning your identity,
learning
exactly.
to love yourself.
Exactly.
Oliver, thoughts?
Well, I'm looking back through at the beginning of the question, and he points out that he came out to his parents last year, and they haven't brought it up since then. So in other words, it sounds like the parents are sort of ignoring. It's not that they're denying
it,
but they're
Oliver's
not
Oliver's making a hard argument that his parents are Korean or Chinese.
I'm actually not, but do white parents just acknowledge the gayness of their children?
They don't do a great job, but I would say disproportionately my friends who have Korean or Chinese parents, they manage to find complex ways to avoid. I mean, God knows WASPs are good at avoiding, too.
Well, black parents just talk about you
behind
your back.
Really, any race has the capability to ignore their child's gayness.
But keep going,
Oliver. Well, no, so I'm just trying to also think, in that case, what do you want this pop culture artifact to do? Is it a way to sort of force your parents to sort of acknowledge you by using the film, in this case, for example, or a television show, as a conduit to which... It's sort of another way of reminding them, hey, remember, I'm gay, and we're going to sit down and watch this so that you are forced to sort of acknowledge that, and maybe we can have a conversation about it. Or is it more, I'm just trying to find things that we now can share in common that is also relevant to my sexuality?
I think you're, like, speaking from experience, I think you probably have a life that they don't ever see or talk about, and you want them to acknowledge it. And if you don't have a significant other that you can drag home and shove in their face, it really is... How do you see a little bit of the world I actually live in? And also, I think an important issue is trying to step towards being able to talk about the long period of time that you lived in their home but couldn't really – where you had another life going on that they don't know about and they don't want to talk about. Mm. And to those points, I think something like Difficult People, which is just half of it is about a gay guy just like living his life in New York – could be an interesting, fun thing to help your mom start thinking about what is his life like. And the other thing is a great British series called Beautiful People, which is about two gay kids growing up in Britain in the 90s. Mm. And it does have magically sweet, wonderful, accepting parents. Like, the little white gay boy has magically sweet, wonderful, accepting parents, and the little British African-British kid has a mom who loves him deeply but also calls him Jamaican slurs for homosexual. And it really does take on a lot of issues, but with musical numbers, and it's great.
Oh, I like that.
I think it's also important, just to wrap this up with one last sentiment, that you show your parents what is most meaningful to you.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't worry about whatever kind of perspective they're going to get from it or whatever might fulfill a canon kind of need.
100%.
You know, it's all about, like, what it means to you so that after the movie's over, you can talk about it in an authentic way that's going to really, like, make a connection.
And don't be afraid.
And you can't control their reaction. That's the other thing. You could show them a brilliant movie that touches your soul, and they still might say, "That's nice, honey," and not say anything
else. They're
missing
out some great content.
And it's their journey, too, and they'll figure it out, hopefully. But, you know, it's I would hate for the person to take that on and make themselves responsible for that.
It's hard. It's hard in a situation when somebody's working to not see you, and someone you really, really love is working
terrible.
To not see you. And so, like, the most important thing is that you be feeding your soul right now so that you are strong and able to handle that situation and understand it's about them, not about you.
Yes.
Margaret, you got another letter for us?
Yes, I do. My kid says he wants to be a singer or actor, but he makes straight A's in school. I've warned him that if he goes into entertainment, God forbid, he'll rent an apartment until death, like me, instead of owning a home. What other ways could I dissuade him?
How is this guy a listener to our show? This is what I want to know.
Like, dissuading
He's
him?
He's a very devoted listener, too.
Go ahead, guy.
Oh, dissuading him just means he'll end up with law school debt before he becomes a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
It's hard. Like, if you guys had a kid, if Ella came to you and said that she wanted to be a performer,
wants to be an author. That's what she says now. So my first thought is, good luck with that, honey. But,
yeah.
But I'm not going to dissuade her from it. I do find, and again, I'm being very specific in piecing apart the actual questions, but this whole, you're going to rent instead of own, as if owning is somehow... I mean, owning can be good, but depends on the market. There's nothing wrong with saving money if your rent is good and using that money towards something else.
And if that's the worst thing that happens, is that they're a renter.
You're good.
Like, good God. I mean,
in our new economy where, you know, we have to be able to move across the country for the right kind of job, it's not like you work for the same factory your whole life now.
Right.
You got to maybe be portable. What comes to mind to me is the song Let the River Run, I think, is a really, really great song about loving an art, and like I just it refers to New York, and it says the sky is a color of blue that you've never even seen in the eyes of your mother. And there is something to me so powerful and wonderful about positioning your adult life in the city, making your own way, as being better than your mom. And I think it feels scandalous, and it feels like wrong and immoral, and I love it so much.
I feel this question deeply because I love this business so deeply, and I didn't come about it in a way that was what everybody was expecting, wanted, or was required. And I just feel like if I could do it again, and there are plenty of triumphs and mistakes that I've definitely made in the 20 years that since I knew I was going to move here, and the 15 years since I've been here, is that if I could look at the future and tell you what to tell your child, I would say, let them pursue their passions as like an after school project and focus on their studies. But I would encourage them to focus on building a brand now. So if that means making a YouTube channel, make a YouTube channel. If that means putting yourself on tape, put yourself on tape and save it. Because you're going to have a day come to you 20 years from now when your kid is going to have a moment where they're going to wonder why they did this. They might not be getting bookings, or they might be getting bookings, or they might revive Intimate Portrait on Lifetime. Who knows? But you want to always remember why you're passionate about something. And it's really great to have material from that. From before.
I think the parent here needs to book the services of a certain Winter Mitchell for their child. Just an advising. Maybe, you know, just a couple hours, then you can kind of break it down for them. But that would be useful.
I wouldn't discourage them.
I feel like movies of the 60s and 70s were so ready to show me the ways that wanting to be an artist was going to destroy you and would make you poor and sad. Mm. Like, you know, Tennessee Williams plays, there's always somebody like living in sadness because they want to be a writer or something like that. And like that filled me with this assumption that that's what would happen to me if I tried to do something that was creative. I think a great movie is Tootsie, which is about a struggling actor who's not making it. And is a really beautiful story about somebody just loving his craft, understanding what it's like to be another person, and going so deep, he like learns more about what it's like to be a woman. And I think it's a movie that has triumph in it, and it also has a lot of failure in it, and it also shows a lot of struggle. And then the other thing, I just think the best movie about the performing arts is Topsy Turvy. Like, I feel like Topsy Turvy shows collaboration and creation in a way that feels real, and I love.
He wants to dissuade him, though.
No, nah. we're not helping him on this one.
Yes,
though.
I think. Yeah, I'm not really voting for dissuading him. Partially because I think a lot of times kids hear that as, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think what could be more important to talk to your son about is to point out the value of side hustles mm-hmm. in any kind of art career
preach.
That you have.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, artists, singers, writers, actors, dancers, whoever, we all have to have something else that we can do pretty capably, whether that's web design or cooking or whatever it might be. I'm encouraged your son makes straight A's in school. I feel like that's a great sign. He's probably got a lot of skills. This isn't the only thing. Also, keep in mind, too, that I read recently that people change careers on average 3 times in their lifetime.
Right.
So it does not mean that because he's an actor and a singer throughout his 20s, and I have known many, many wonderful people that were in a band or whatever throughout their 20s and maybe mid-30s. And by the time they were 36, they were kind of tired of it. And they chose another path. And they had a family or whatever it might be. So it's not permanent. You know what I mean? And hopefully your kid will make it and he'll be a big star. But, you know, 98% of people are just working artists. And so he's got to find a way to sort of practically live that.
There's a great line in Dr. Zhivago where Dr. Zhivago says, poetry is no more a profession than good health. And that stuck with me. Like, I really feel like if you have an art that you love, you should do it because you love it. And if you can figure out ways to make money from it, good for you. But also, you need to have a clear strategy of what you're going to do to make money. Because what, like, all 4 people in this room regularly make money from doing things that are ridiculous and no one should make money for. And everyone here has
people make money for doing what I do.
Yes, and we're the winners. we all also have clear strategies for how we make money when that shit doesn't come through. Margaret's interviewed a lot of starlets. Oliver has to talk to 19-year-olds on a regular basis. Winter is always cleaning up shit for people who should not be making the shit in the first place.
It's true.
All right. And I worked on some bad shows. And I have a law degree, just in case. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back to answer more of your questions after this.
I'm Barbara Gray.
I'm Brandi Posey.
And I'm Tess Barker.
We're Lady to Lady. Do you want a sleepover in your ears?
Is that a friend in your pocket, or are you just podcast to see me?
We're a portable hangout you can bring to the gym, on the subway, or on an oil rig.
Seriously, we have listeners who do that.
Chill with us while we get high with Margaret Cho.
Talk showgirls with Katya from Drag Race.
And hear Broadway star Anthony Rapp sing Hamilton.
I am not throwing away my shot. Throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
That's Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
And Oliver Wang.
Oliver, do you have another letter for us?
Yes, and I had to paraphrase this because the original letter was very long, and my apologies to the letter writer, but here we go. So we have two girls. Girl number one was dumped by girl number two the week before Lemonade came out. Girl number two wants to still be friends, but that only works for girl number one, the dumpee, if they first clear the air as to what happened in their relationship. And unfortunately, girl number two ghosted girl number one when they were supposed to sit down to do that. So the question is, and this is now in the words of girl number one, if it turns out she is serious about being friends again, is it worth it? Can full forgiveness be achieved? And if not, what do you think I should do? Do you guys, that be us, think I can make the transition from wrathful, don't hurt yourself, to the warm and loving all night? Or should I stay in the realm of sorry until I forget her entirely? I'd appreciate any advice you could lend.
Okay. You need distance. Like, you guys need some time apart from each other to, like, deal with your own shit. Everything doesn't need to be hashed out. Everything doesn't need to be a conversation. Mm-hmm. You need some space. I want you to remember what a good song Dolly Parton's Here You Come Again is. And that's the kind, like, that's the kind of thing that you can only achieve if you really are apart from someone for a while and they show back up and you have vague, distant memories of all of the ways that they were terrible for you and, like, real, real deep memories of the way they gave you orgasms nobody else ever did.
Okay. I agree with you, Guy, 100%. And take it from me, who I've tried to become friends with people too soon after breakups, and it's a mistake. I've learned the error of my ways. And I think because, too, this woman dissed you when you did try to sit down with her, and that pisses me off. And she's not taking care of you in that case. She's not interested in really having a friendship with you right now. So I think you have to take that cue that, like, in friendships, whether they spring out of relationships or not, you need to be able to take care of each other. If that person doesn't, bye-bye. You move on.
Move on. Life is too short. Our time on this planet is dwindling. Why spend so much time worrying about somebody who's not worrying about you? Don't be someone's option when you can be someone's number one. Don't focus on somebody who is just using you as a number two. Literally and figuratively. Fuck them.
All right. Hey, Margaret, you got a letter for me?
I do. I am the newest employee at a company and have a sexist male coworker who I seem to spar with at every turn on matters both big and small. Any tips for not engaging in debate / metaphorically walking away from an argument when I love to argue so much? I worry that I'm going to be seen as bitchy and not a team player if I continue to get into spats with him.
This sounds like the first act of a romantic comedy where the two of you end up falling deeply, desperately in love with each other.
He said, she said.
He said, she said. Very good. I'm also going to say Adam's Rib.
Going back to the classics.
Kate Hepburn and Spencer Tracy were on opposite sides of a gender-fueled legal case. It's one of my favorite romantic comedies.
Scarface.
I've never seen Scarface.
You've never seen Scarface?
I've never seen Scarface. Margaret, what should this woman do?
I've been there. I've been there a couple of times. I, in fact, got into a raging argument once with a coworker because he said that if a pilot came on an airplane and it was a female's voice and she said, "We're having problems, we might be going down," he would be a lot more worried than if it was a male pilot who came on and said the same thing. Mm. And, of course, I objected strenuously to such a point. What I have discovered in debating with people like this is that you're never really going to change them. That if anything, you have to kind of go into self-care mode and preserve your own sanity mode and recognize that it's not really worth it too much. Where it's worth it is when their bullshit is infringing on your work and your livelihood and you getting up in the game. So I feel like she has to make a decision or a call here. Is it like, what is he really, when's his sexist behavior coming out? What's it about? Is it about work stuff or is it just him like flying off the handle about pop culture stuff? Yeah, that would be my two cents about it because I just don't think it's worth it going around with dudes like this. I also just think that, too, like, if you do decide you want to argue with him, I think you can do it in such a way that you stay level-headed and make your points really succinctly without, like, losing your temper.
Leslie Jones.
Because you're not going to win anything that way.
Leslie Jones made the really interesting argument when she was going through all of those people attacking her on Twitter that just ignoring it kind of let those sentiments be out there without anybody challenging them. And there is always that tension, especially in the workplace where, like, propriety matters. And if somebody is being a dick, but nobody, but it's passive aggressive dickishness that our society just says we should all listen to and think is adorable. It's really hard.
Yeah, it's definitely really hard. And I'm not saying necessarily that she just ignores it, but I think it's a case of knowing how much you can affect. You know what I mean? I get the sense that she wants to change his mind. And that's the part that I'm saying, you can argue as much as you would like with him, but know that he's probably never going to change his mind. And so you have to decide if that's, like, worth your effort.
I'm going to say you're going to need to channel this rage. If you're just sort of, like, pushing down rage inside of you, having to deal with this guy, you're going to need to channel that rage. And I would say, fun place to channel that rage, mean Yelp reviews, fighting with people on Facebook. I mean, you're going to need to get that out, especially if you are somebody who likes making arguments. And there's something really frustrating about when somebody says something stupid and you can't tell them exactly why they're wrong. So, you know, go on and review stuff and allow, like, give yourself the privilege of making organized arguments about how things should work. And then, yes.
Can I add one more thing? I also think she can just be really vocal about what she thinks as far as women doing awesome things, like championing the things she loves that women are doing, like being the sort of pillar of all the great work that women do in this world, and not even like worrying that this man's got some dumbass thoughts.
It is that thing of like, fighting with people is the first thing that comes to mind, but it is hard because it is adversarial, where, like, you know, tweeting something absolutely every day during Women's History Month about women who have done great things or stuff like that is a great way of just declaring yourself and letting him understand indirectly, you know, don't mess with this bitch.
You're being, like, proactive because you're thinking like a comedian, and that is smart. I'm going to give you some advice that happens to work real well in the real world. One, you're going to need to take notes because you're going to end up probably having to sit in a room with H fucking R and defend yourself after this against this cunt.
Yep.
Make sure you take a note every single time the shit happens. Two, you're going to need to also exercise this anger elsewhere. But just please, take it from me, someone who has done so, do not exercise it towards this person. You are giving them what they want. Don't engage. Disengage. By the way, don't pretend for 2 seconds that you're going to change his mind, or don't act like you have allies. We are in a more than ever in a dog-eat-dog world. No one has your back, not even HR. You need to protect yourself. Stop engaging him. Stop trying to get his approval. I know that's kind of like a women's thing to do, is like we kind of want approval. No. Fuck his approval. Do what you got to do. You're going there to work. You don't have to be his homie. And then you pull out and go and do what you have to do and exercise your femininity elsewhere.
The point about allies is really important. I would say there are a couple of HBO series that can really help you out here. One is called Rome and one is called Game of Thrones.
Hello.
Okay? It is all politics at all times. Mm-hmm. Be working your allies at all times. Be figuring out who else is he pissing off. Talk to them. Don't make a toxic work environment. Nobody's saying that. And, of course, you don't want that. You want a happy place. But you also want a place where you know anyone else who can potentially have your back will have your back. I do think it is possible to build alliances and positive relationships with people.
And but also know that that might not happen.
Yes. And I also think, like, anytime I go into a workplace, part of me tries to identify the person who is most likely to have a problem with me
mm-hmm.
and get on that person's good side, because why not? And in a lot of situations, it's led to friendship, and in a lot of situations, it's just led to me understanding and having under control my relationship with somebody who could potentially be dangerous.
Yeah.
I also think if you're trying to be the more rational person in a pair of conflicts or conflict involving a pair, is you let the other person hang themselves with their own rope.
Exactly.
And so you let them rant all they want, and you can basically bait them and set them up while seeming like the better person with this, and that'll expose them to the other coworkers for who the person really is.
You're basically, the Hillary strategy.
Yeah.
First debate Hillary
Dangle
strategy.
Dangle it.
Is that working for her so far?
It's doing something.
It did something. All right. I have to, just one thing to wrap this up. One of my mentors, Melanie Bromley, said to me that karma is real and it's universal and it's mathematical, darling. It's math. It's simple math. And it is. If somebody's trying to do you in, it's only the universe's way to bring that shit and slingshot back to you, like the Martian.
Well, the beautiful thing about Hollywood is that Nobody is on top that long.
No.
Like, some people are magnificent gods for 7 years.
Yeah.
But
did you see that article?
What?
The article about Brangelina that said, generally, you're famous for 7 years, and then you have to stir something up if you want to maintain another 7 years. And I've been saying this forever.
Oh, that's a great point.
It's 7 years is the max. And the reason that Brangelina, the whole thing has sort of fizzled out is because they've Max, they're like expired eggs.
But I mean, the thing is, every time, so frequently, I'm in a writer's room and people are kissing the asses of the people above them,
sure.
And they don't realize that the people below them are going to be way more likely to give them jobs 3 years later.
Exactly.
All right, Winner, read us the next letter.
I'm trying to get rid of a guy I don't like, but I want to do it in the most complicated and madcap way possible. What do you recommend?
Oh, this is messed up.
All right.
I have an example.
Let Oliver make his criticism of the question.
Just don't let me forget that it's French.
No, I want to hear what Winner has to say right now.
Well, no, we want to hear your boring takedown of this person trying to be fun.
No, I don't have a problem with it. I like this question. I mean, I think it's kind of fucked up, but I like the question. I mean, for me, I guess I would have suggested make a mixtape of songs that are not that subtle as to what your true sentiments
are. True, I like that idea. That's a good one.
But you lead them into it, so they don't really realize it until about song four, and they're like,
they
what
know
the
what's
fuck?
Up. They know.
That's great. Winner, what are your thoughts?
Chandler on Friends tried to leave Janice by saying he was moving to Yemen.
That's delightful.
And he got as far as he went. He had an address. It was like something, something Yemen Road.
Just understand, whatever manipulative bullshit you try, you are slingshotting someone else into a romantic comedy.
Yes.
You're the asshole boyfriend or girlfriend from the beginning.
Yes.
I'm going to say go catfishing. I'm going to say pretend to be somebody else, create a web of lies. Oh. You guys, during my early days of soliciting anonymous sex on the internet, I did a lot of using fake profiles to get things out of other people or hurt people who had hurt me. And I'm a better person for it.
Did I ever tell you about my Black Swan profile?
No.
On OkCupid, I had a fake dark Margaret profile.
Oh.
Wonderful.
Yeah. What did you
use it for?
Is it still out there? Can we share it?
I'm going to have to try to find it because I never shut it down, so it should still be there.
Wow.
But yeah.
Masturbating in front of mommy type shit.
Maybe not quite that, but
what was the purpose of it? What was the purpose of it?
It was basically to put like the most like dark idea of myself online and see what kind of men would call back to that.
And fabulous. Did this start before or after David started?
Oh, before David.
Okay. And does David
trying to get her caught up?
Does David know that this exists?
Oh yeah, he definitely knows. I mean, I wrote a piece about it for the LA Times, and we met, like, towards the end of me, like, playing around with this dumb thing, and I told him about it, and he thought it was hilarious. I was like, I know you're my guy, because he thought that's good.
What are the advantages of playing around with alternative identities online like that?
You know, it was very interesting, because it was this, like I said, dark Margaret, it was Black Swan Margaret, and so the guys that would write in, and I talked a lot about, like, doing drugs, and, like, you know, just, I will show it on the Facebook group, because it is funny. It's also just funny. Uh-huh. But at any rate, like, guys would write in being like, I'll take you to Palm Springs this weekend. I got a 8-ball. Like, people would write in crazy shit.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, my God, White Swan Margaret never gets this. You know, where I say that I like David Foster Wallace books and, you know, long walks. I mean, what the fuck? So it was just a really interesting, like, binary. It tells you right away, like you can show one side of yourself. And this dark Margaret, it's not really me, but it was, like, an extremely exaggerated version.
I'm going to argue neither is First Date Margaret.
Yes,
neither
it's true.
Is OkCupid Margaret.
Yes.
Margaret, you know, like, because you are sort of presenting that, well, I talk about David Foster Wallace and hiking now, right?
Yeah.
And we're all more than that, and everybody is presenting a lot of the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of it was just to call out the fallacy of trying to present yourself on online dating forums in the first place. You know, how absurd it is to think you can capture yourself.
I generally just pretended to be a bisexual college wrestler from Augsburg College who's more attractive than I am. That was my strategy.
That's a good one. Well, I was going to just
advocate.
How are
we strategizing to get them to dump this person?
I know. Go back to the question.
Are they going out? I'm trying to get rid of a guy I don't like. That doesn't suggest to me they're going out, because why would they be going out if she doesn't like him? It sounds to me maybe he's bugging her and he's trying to get this guy to fuck off.
Fake cancer.
Whoa, that is karmically incorrect.
Complicated, yes. Madcap, no, that's just fucked
I went
up.
To a De La Soul Fake concert. Lupus? I went to a De La Soul concert one time, and this guy would not stop hitting on me. And somehow he tracked down where I worked at the time. And then he started calling the receptionist, being like,
Men are horrible.
And so I told the receptionist, who was a totally awesome guy, finally after like the fifth or sixth phone call, I was like, just tell this guy I'm having open heart surgery. Like, I am done. Like, I'm on my deathbed. And so like Chris, this guy, like delivered this in his dry voice to the dude. And he was like, okay, can I still leave a voicemail?
Oh, my God.
You said you met them at a De La Soul concert?
Yeah.
I love you.
You should have sent them to Dark Swan, Black Swan.
No,
Margaret.
This is so long. I mean, this is like in the 90s.
That's so great.
I think you hire an a cappella group to go to this person's home or workplace and sing, you know, a flip-off song.
Like, pick something specific because I'm loving this.
The problem is all the ones I can think of. I mean, I was going to say maybe, you know, CeeLo's Fuck You, but that's really a love song, you know, disguised as a fuck you song. So you don't want any ambiguity with this one.
But
you know?
She says complicated and madcap. I personally advocate for like
you like
full
this
out.
Person if you were going madcap and if you're doing something madcap and complicated. You
she
like
at least
them.
Wants to have a good time in getting rid of him.
Right.
And
your karma's
I'm saying
up.
Like we go back to the mixtape idea that you make it just completely schizophrenic. Like you have every genre of music on there, like go from like Celine Dion to like Metallica to like some to like My Morning Jacket and just let the guy try to figure out who the fuck you are and I don't know, play with him.
Play your own twin who comes to visit you for the week.
That's amazing.
And then you seduce him with the assertion of, hey, it's the same pussy, and then get really, really mad at him for cheating on you. But then say that he's crazy and you never had a twin.
That's right. So if you're bushy, get a Brazilian. If you've got red hair, now you have dark hair.
This is also a good
if you mold on the left, it can be on the right. This is easy shit. If you want to get crazy with it.
Was this an episode of Three's Company? I'm trying to remember.
Of course.
Let's hope so.
Okay.
And then our final question is kind of a big one. It starts, in 2013, when I was 24, I was diagnosed with a disease that is expected to kill me. It turned my life upside down and completely changed the trajectory I was on. I've spent the past 3+ years being a full-time patient, trying every treatment available, and fully expecting to be dead within 6 months the entire time. The good news, I am currently on a treatment that so far has been effective, and while I am not in the clear, my odds of making it to 30 have improved a lot. The bad news, I don't know what to do with myself now that I am no longer in the dying gracefully business. I have long since left behind the career, life goals, and everything that defined me before diagnosis. I don't know what I want to do with myself or even what I am capable of at this point. How does one reinvent himself after medical trauma? And then there's a note below. After is perhaps too strong a word since I am still in treatment, but I have passed into a new set of expectations regarding life and death. This was a hard question for us. We didn't know if this was an appropriate thing for us to talk about this show, but we also really loved the honesty. And, you know, what a significant question this guy was sharing with us, and we really loved and appreciated that. To me, some of the art that has meant the most to me is about people in those moments where they don't know who they are or where they're going. And I really feel like this is not the same. It's very different. But as somebody who hit a point in my early 20s when a lot of the things I thought I was going to do washed away, when a lot of the relationships I had washed away, and I was forced to look at myself in the mirror as an adult and say, what's next, was really a difficult time for me, but a beautiful time. Here are some things that I will recommend to think about that. One of them is the movie Babette's Feast, which I talk about a lot, but makes a hard argument about what you're doing here on this planet, like what you're here for. And it is to enjoy yourself and to try to bring pleasure to others in the argument of that movie. You don't have to agree with it, but I think it's a lovely way of thinking about the life that you lead and how to end it in a way where you are satisfied, where you're not wanting anything more and saying, yeah, I fucking, I made it all and I ate it all up. Another work of art that really hits the question of I don't know what I'm doing with myself is Wicked. I think that the end of the first act of Wicked, when Elphaba says, like, I don't want it, I can't want it anymore, you know, it is the screaming rage of the thing that motivated you your entire life no longer being there. And, you know, it's a really fascinating question. And there are also a lot of really good works that wrestle with, you know, the experience of confronting the possibility of your own death. Julia Sweeney's God Said Ha, Tig Notaro's Live is a very short comedy album. It's like 20, 30 minutes, but it is somebody who got diagnosed with cancer and is being told you have less than a year to live, wrestling with it. And you should give it a listen. Anybody else?
I think that I don't have any pop culture recommendations, but I will make some for you and send them to you in a DM. I would say that if you, the crux of your message was really about you don't know what to do now because you're still uncertain, but you're hopeful. I've known many people in my life who have been in the same situation as yourself, and every single person that I know has stopped and dropped everything and gone and done what they wanted to do. So if that means going to Paris, go to Paris. I'm sure we can figure out a way to get you there. If that means going to New York and spending a weekend there, having the best hot chocolate ever, and going to a museum and sitting in the park and just reading the paper, I'm sure somebody will help make you figure that out, and we can probably do that as well.
Well, there's that genre of your dying movies. Like,
I don't want to say that. No, but because I'm really hopeful.
I'm talking more about like Joe versus the Volcano or Last Holiday, where there's somebody really like throws it all to the side.
But they're never really dying.
But they're never really dying, which is
because Hollywood is full of shit.
Yes, but I do think that Joe versus the Volcano is a great movie where he does like he ends up throwing himself into a volcano because he's given the opportunity to go after what he loves, not what he thinks he's supposed to be doing. And I think, you know, however much of a failure that movie was, it's also John Patrick Shanley. It's kind of a good movie.
It's an amazing movie.
Take a look at it. A really wonderful movie about decontextualization is Albert Brooks's Lost in America. It's about a dude who gives up his whole life. He and his baby boomer wife are going to, like, check out hippie style, but they're doing it in, a motorhome. And 3 weeks later, she has lost all of their money, and they are stuck at the, like, in Arizona working service jobs. But it's a great, like, King Lear style, strip away all of this man's pretenses and who is he on the inside. Comedies are a fun way of sort of like wrestling with these ideas.
You know, I recently rewatched The Pianist just like a week ago. I got sucked into it again on HBO, and it's a brilliant movie. And then afterwards, I went down this rabbit hole of researching Władysław Szpilman, who's the pianist that it's actually based on, his true life story. And I learned this incredible detail about when the Warsaw radio station that was getting bombed right as the occupation was happening, and he was playing and his song got interrupted. And then when the war was over and that was the last radio broadcast in Warsaw, public radio broadcast that I know of, from doing this research. And then when the war was over, he came back and he picked up the same song again. And he just started it where he left off, or approximately where he left off. And I found that to be a really beautiful story about this man whose life was completely ripped apart for several years by this trauma of being part of the Holocaust and being so close to death. And, you know, for one thing, I want to say, too, that, you know, congratulations for finding right now this treatment that is helping you. And I hope it keeps you seeing through. But I also want to say that, you know, from this experience, you've been given this incredible gift of like wisdom and grace. And I know that that isn't always good comfort. Nobody wants to go through a hellish experience to get grace or wisdom, but that's the way it goes sometimes. And I think you have this. I think you can go back to looking at whatever the song your sort of life was playing when the war started, so to speak, and try to continue it again. Mm-hmm. You know, go back to what that was and what you were passionate about, and go back into that fire, go back into that passion.
Hmm. The only thing else I would add is that I think there's a power in just creating things, and whether or not there's an audience for it or not, just the act of creation. And so that could be creating a song. It could be writing a series of essays about your experiences. Anything that allows you to sort of exercise your imagination and to leave something in the world. I mean, and I'm not saying that in terms of as if you're going to not be here tomorrow, but rather just to have it out there. I think is both cathartic for the person doing it, and you never know what how other people who are going through some kind of similar experience may respond and find comfort in it as well. So, I mean, it sounds like this person's been through, I mean, a ton, a lot, and I would wager there are other people who have been through similar kinds of experiences that would benefit from simply understanding and knowing that they're not alone out there with this.
We love you, and take care of yourself, and tell us more about your journey. Tell us about the pop culture that has helped you figure this out so we and our listeners will know a little bit better when we're in similar situations. Thanks so much for sharing with
us. Yeah, thank you. And please tweet at me about what you need.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back with our current jams after this.
Why would you listen to a podcast of TV pilots that never got made? It must not have been any good, right?
I don't know for a fact that anyone read it.
They couldn't get the deal done.
There was kind of a regime change.
Someone at the studio who was in a decision-making capacity said, these guys seem like losers.
They just blamed it on, okay, well, it must be women.
We got word that USA had decided to stop doing comedy.
Why aren't we making this? It was so good.
Hear the TV comedies you never got to see on the Dead Pilot Society podcast. Listen on MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell,
Margaret Wappler,
Oliver Wang.
Every week on Pop Rocket, we ask the question, what is your current jam? This week, instead of having a jam, I want to answer one more question.
Okay.
This one, we have to answer it. I'm a late 20s woman who's trying to figure out whether or not she is bisexual. I have never been with or dated women before. And while the idea excites me and I feel nervous and lost is how to begin, I feel like I'm too old to be, quote unquote, experimenting. Baby, you're never too old.
Bingo.
Yeah. Like, life's just beginning. A, it means that you get to be, like, cooler and full of fresh new approaches to the world than everyone else your age. And I know so many, especially women, who realized that they were gay later in life. Listen to some Wanda Sykes albums and Wanda Sykes podcasts. And also, just an important instructional tool for bisexuality, Ani DiFranco's Little Plastic Castle. Little Plastic Castle gives you most of the tools that you need to experience female bisexuality. I would know if anyone's going to know. Anyone else have some advice?
As someone who is 85% straight and 15% full-on lesbian, I would suggest, but like unless dicks go extinct, I'm pretty much straight.
They might.
Duly noted.
Did you see that report
Big
in National
dick.
Geographic?
Huh? What? Are you lying?
I am. Sorry.
Okay, thank God. Don't scare me.
I know.
Big dicks.
They're just listed as concern currently. Concern.
There's a helpful map if you want to look.
What was the question?
Is it too late?
Look, I've been trying to breed dicks together for years, and it's just not working in captivity. That was horrible, and I'm sorry.
Speaking of which, if you're trying to figure out your sexuality, I'm not qualified to tell you. However,
the world told you were straight from the day you were born. So if you're questioning,
right. There's
some shit to question.
Right, exactly. Like, I've questioned it over and over and over again, and I always come to the same point. I love cock. So I think that, and, you know, I'm interested in other stuff, but I really love dick. So my suggestion is that if you are questioning, Pornhub has a really delicate category called female friendly. And I always judge it by this. What type of pornography do you prefer? Are you really leaning towards the female? If you lean towards female friendly, you're kind of like in the middle because you just want to be treated right. But if you're like on that hardcore gangbang side, you're kind of like missing on some dick and you just need to be fucked right. But then if you're like leaning towards like full on hardcore, why are you making this face, Guy?
I just don't feel like porn videos are the best way of determining what lesbians are into.
I don't either, but I'm telling you as someone who's 85% straight.
Okay. I'm listening.
Fair.
This question has gone off the rails, Margaret. Landed on the rails, and gone off of
Margaret or Oliver, do you have anything to offer to this question?
All I want to say is I find it adorable.
Don't treat me like had the UCLA linebacker.
I find it adorable when people in their 20s say that I'm too old for anything, because that is such a 20 thing, is to feel like you're running out of time.
I was 23 and I felt so fucking old to be coming out of the closet. I was like, everybody's in college.
You're not too old. You're not too old, girl.
Yeah, I think you can only find out by trying. That's all I got to say.
Oliver.
What?
I don't know. There's something at the end of that. I'm like, is this some more Black Swan target you're trying to share with us here?
Wobbler.
Oliver, what's your current
jam?
There
are many layers and layers and layers, Oliver.
So, I bet there are.
I have been digging through a box of cassette tapes that date back to the mid-90s when I started my radio show at Calix in Berkeley back then. And it's been kind of a trip. I mean, it's really opening up a time capsule into what I was like in my mid-20s and stuff that has been literally boxed away for the last two decades. And it's been really interesting and fun to go back through it. And one of the things that I just came across today was the Advance for Slum Village's first album that was going to come out on A&M Records, which I received when I interviewed them in, I believe, late 1998, early 1999. But then this is when they were on A&M. And then A&M folded, and it left Slum Village without a label, and it took them another year until they got re-signed by, I think, Interscope / Good Vibe, and they finally put it out. But it was really cool to remember that, oh, my God, I've had this, you know, it's a very, you know, a pretty obscure kind of advance of Slum Village's sort of groundbreaking first album. And one of the songs I pulled off of it is a song that did not make it to the final version when the album finally came out in 2000. It is We Be Them, the T version, that's what it's called, We Be Them, T version. And that's how it's described on this advance.
Let's hear it.
Don't even come my way forward with that. Chillin', fillin' my shit like Ryan Flup or Clint, Nick. Step in the ass and beat your last shit. Fillin' my flow again. We be them, niggas. Yeah, we be them. Yeah, we be them, niggas. Yeah, we be them. Yeah, we be them, niggas. Yeah, we be them. Yeah, we be them.
No opinion. Margaret Wapler. What's your current jam?
My current jam is from L.A. Priest, a guy whose God-given name, I suppose, is Sam Dust. And it's a song called Oh, I Know, which I heard at the end of an episode of High Maintenance. And if you guys aren't watching that show, it's on HBO, but there are also a bunch of the webisodes online. And it is super entertaining and like a little beautiful short story with weed filtered in. Because he's a weed dealer, the main character. So anyway, this is Oh I Know from L.A. Priest.
This is like punky reggae shit at La Cita on Fridays, Wobbler.
No, girl.
Winter is having a good time.
I really am.
Winter Mitchell, what is your current jam?
Okay, so this is kind of timely. Twitter might be bought. Twitter might be purchased by three large conglomerates. Disney and Google are in the running.
I know.
It's basically Twitter is done, y'all. Yeah. You better get your. I literally tweeted.
Does that mean we have to do Snapchat now? Is that
no,
what this means?
I'm actually kind of off.
Do
Snapchat.
We no longer have antitrust law in this country? We've got three media corporations and they own everything.
But they predicted that to me when I was 17 in journalism class. So I don't know why everybody else is shocked. I always assumed that we're going to be owned by one conglomerate
because we have perfect. Good antitrust laws that no one is enforcing.
Right. So, you know, where I find my music has generally been Vine, and I got to be honest with you, I haven't been on Vine in a hot minute because it's just the quality, you know, nobody's making new content because they're moving everything to sort of different platforms, and it's just kind of sad. And Twitter owns Vine. And I'm just kind of a little upset about Twitter. I think I tweeted on my Black Swan account, Queen Everything, that if I'm the last person, if I'm one of the last five people using Twitter, it will have been worth it.
Do you think now that online existence is just inherently nomadic? Like, we'll just move from platform to platform
Like, now,
it's never going to settle anyone.
I don't. I never thought that Twitter would succumb to this because Twitter is such a tool. Like, it is a tool. It's actually, to me, my number one favorite platform. Mm-hmm. And y'all know what my number 10th worst platform is. So I would have to assume that Twitter has still serves a need for people. It still has has a point in all of this. But if it gets scooped up by a large corporation, it just doesn't become, it's just not cool anymore. Unless they actually plan to change, provide a little, a better version, refurbish, refresh, do whatever they're going to do to it, clean house, because every, God forbid, everybody in there is
the worst. Can I
bring
in with a question to you?
Yes.
I never thought about it the way that when the successful users of a platform start getting jobs from mainstream media, that mm-hmm. platform starts to die.
Yeah.
And which platforms do you think have been most resistant to that? Because I would think Twitter has kept a lot of people because having a TV writing job doesn't stop you from tweeting. But Vine,
I mean, last night you could not get a retweet from a comedian during that debate. We okay.
Were, yes, we were.
You all were. I could see it.
We were just paying attention to ourselves.
Yes.
But Vine, I feel like would be hit harder by that.
Vine, no, because Vine is such, it's so new. Vine is not really like, it's not like Vine's been around like actually staking a claim. It built an economy, a micro economy, and now you see these little poor little kids just flailing about with their half-baked talents trying to figure what they're going to do. And if you,
yeah, because the good ones have TV shows.
Well, the good ones have TV shows, some of them, like I would say probably like four of them, and that's out of how many? So, like, Vine,
fair.
You know what I think about? Like, let's be honest. Like, Cameron Dallas is not going to be, like, competing with Tom Cruise for, like, World War Z 4, okay?
Logan Paul is adorable.
Whatever.
All right, give us your song.
My song is, are you trying to wrap me up?
Yes.
So I discovered, you get me on a rant about technology, I can't stop. Ultimate by Denzel Curry is one of the last, will probably be one of the last songs I've ever discovered because of Vine. It wasn't a meme and it's just great. Play it. Ripping through cartilage, I am the hardest bitch, rapping up, putting sarcophagus. Dearly departed, it's done when it started, so now that I'm living so harmonious. Feeling like Spartacus, Curry the ultimate, I am the best, there's no politics, bitch, I'm ultimate. Ultimate. Ultimate.
That is a good chant.
It's a good chant.
It sounds still, a lot like Oliver's.
I still want to know. No, it doesn't. I still want to know if Denzel Curry is a real name. Is there someone out there named like LeBron?
Look, his
you know,
mom
Washington?
Is probably 27. That's his name.
There you go.
Okay.
Fair enough.
You have been listening to A Very Special Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, and Oliver Wang. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Teddy Bear. Jay Reeves, 1425, and Icarus Rex for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. That's only 3 this week. Always remember, the more 5-star reviews we get, the stronger Margaret Wappler's bone density. If you've got an opinion you want to share about this week's topics, you can join our conversation on our Facebook group or tweet at us. We are at Pop Rocket. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are the playful Christian Duenas, and our brand new producer. Everybody, welcome and give your love to, is it Kara or Kara?
Kara.
Kara Hart.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.